It means a lot. It's a special night, you know, obviously, you know, having Maddox announce it, being the Atlanta guy, and, you know, having a guy I looked up to and, you know, early in my career, and having Peeve here, you know, on the panel, it means a lot. So this is a special night.
That was Braves pitcher Chris Sale on MLB Network after winning the NL Cy Young Award, and how special it meant to him to get that honor and also to receive it from a former Brave himself. So what a special evening for him and for the entire Braves organization and fans out there.
Yeah, awesome to see. We mentioned earlier the 8th Cy Young in Atlanta Braves history, and obviously a long track record. his comment that he, you know, dipped his toe in that pool, and he probably brought that group down with Chris Sale being in there. But I keep going back to the fact that Alex Anthopoulos, just it was magic what he was able to do, bringing Chris Sale here and bringing him over from the Red Sox. And obviously you lose Vaughn Grissom, but I think everybody's okay with it when you bring in a Cy Young winner.
Well, yeah, and give Chris Sale credit for having an off season where he was able to be healthy and go through and stay healthy. He worked on it. Give Brian Snitker credit for managing his innings. You know, they did a good job of moving these guys around and you know, with extra rest essentially the entire season.
Right.
And Chris Sale went out there and just looked like the guy that won a World Series with the Red Sox. I mean, he was phenomenal. The guy that was, and I've always joked about it, that was cutting up jerseys in the White Sox when he didn't like those throwbacks. I mean, Chris Sale is this, you know, he's misunderstood, I think, in some ways if he does never played for your team, because he's such a competitor. His mentality is so aggressive when he's out there. And I mean, I can't tell you that I enjoyed Braves baseball more, Tiff, than when he was on the mound this year.
And I want to come back to what you just said. First, I want to point out, though, you talked about a little bit about his journey and stuff. He's battled injuries since 2019, Tommy John surgery in March of 2020. Then from 2020 to 2023, he made only 31 starts. So for him to be able to get this honor, I'm sure means a lot to him for all he had to work through. And then again, you saying, you know, you don't kind of know what you have with him unless he's on your team. Well, how many times do we hear guys in that clubhouse just talk about what he had brought to the organization in terms of toughness, in terms of experience? A lot of guys leaned on him. And so, you know, I think it's really special.
And we talked about the, you know, Spencer Strider last year being a bulldog on the mound. That's exactly, I don't know what this team is without a guy like that personality wise in this rotation. And that's exactly where Chris Sale picked up.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about Spencer Schwellenbach, right? He's such a huge fan of what he's done.
Schwelly.
You don't think he didn't benefit from having a guy like Chris Sale there that can help him?
Immensely.
Chris Sale, you could probably make a argument for and win it easily that he was not only, you know, he's not only the Cy Young, the Triple Crown pitcher, but he was also the MVP of this Braves team last year because he might have been the he helped carry that team in a lot of ways, not just on the field, like you mentioned, Tiff.
Yeah.
Falcons on a bye week, so we will not see them in action this weekend. And so, like we discussed this week, really focusing on the defense and what they needed to improve on or change during this time off. Now it's the offense's turn, and what are you guys looking for them to improve on or change before they come back?
Well, you can talk a lot of things. I mean, I think you can talk a lot of things. I wrote down some things that seemed to be numbers based, like red zone efficiency, third down efficiency, your time of possession. I feel like could get better because it could help the defense. And I even talked about penalties. But one of the things I didn't talk about, and Mike, I think you can kind of tell me if I'm off here, or if I'm right, you can tell me the ways that we can accomplish this.
Okay,
is I need more of what most people would call little shallow crossing routes, shallow drag routes, little intermediate routes that are moving away from defenders.
Because, mesh concepts.
Yes. I guess that's what the expert would call it. You know, I'm using layman terms.
I was like,
I need stuff that runs away from people that's not necessarily deep downfield. Because I think you've got guys in this offense like Bijan, like Darnell Mooney. I think Kadarryl Hodge is a really good player. We've seen it, but when he gets the ball in his hands and he can be a yak guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he's physical and he has a little bit of speed. But I need more of that, and I know that it's built in the system. I literally have talked to coaches in this system, not necessarily in this team, but other guys that it about these kind of concepts. And I'm curious of why you're not doing it or how to add more into it. And maybe they're doing it more than I realize.
Well, and I think they've done a little bit of that. The point with the mesh concepts is you have to catch the defense in man coverage, right? You can't run mesh concepts into zone. It takes away exactly what you're trying to do. And, you know, the mesh coverage has to be versus man, essentially, to work out the way you're talking about. You can't run away from coverage if you're just running right into coverage. And I think a lot of times you might have those sort of concepts put in for man coverage, and then you run into a zone situation where you're reading zone, and all of a sudden some of these wide receivers are sitting down in the middle of the zones, and that's where you see some of the underneath throws to a Drake London and Kyle Pitts and things like that.
But I'm okay with that to an extent. I feel like lately it feels like everything's breaking out, and we're not using the middle of the field as much.
I agree.
And so I'm okay. To me, though, that's still okay, because if I get Darnell or Kadarrell in a position where he runs into the soft spot of a zone and he just kind of gears it down or just stops, and Kirk can realize he get the ball out quick, normally that's going to allow him to turn and maybe make a guy miss or go north and south a little bit.
Yeah, and I have in my stuff that I want to see them utilize the middle of the field more in the passing game. And it is interesting to me, how many times have we come in here, and I know that you notice it every single week, because I know Arch notices it. One of Kirk's first reads is a check down in the flat. And it's not even a check down. Like, he's not check down to, I think when people hear that, they go, okay, he's getting through his progression. He's going one to two to three, and then he's going, all right, nothing's there. Let me check down to Bijan. Like, a lot of times that's his first option. A lot of times Kirk's going, okay, defense is bailing. They're leaving the flat. They're going into cover three. Nobody's out there. Bijan can make something happen in the flat. But not very often do we see some of the option routes or the choice routes to Bijan actually stepping up in the middle of the defense and the vacated defenders, the linebackers bailing, where Bijan's actually catching the ball over the middle and is able to make something happen. So a lot of times he's constrained by the sideline. I'd love to see some of the stuff where he has the opportunity to step up, and maybe you can put somebody else in the backfield with him, be it, like you talked about, a Darnell or Kadarrell Hodge, that can run those options out into the flat as well.
Do you feel like that they've forgotten Algier a little bit in the passing game? Because hear me out for a second. Because I
forgot him completely last week.
Well, yeah, and I think some of the game dictated that. But I feel like that Algier is still a threat in the passing game. It's not to the extent that you have with Bijan, but he's still a guy that we've seen, even, and Arthur Smith did a good job of saying, hey, just because you're out here doesn't mean you're not going to get the ball thrown your way.
Yeah.
And I know they've thrown the ball his way some. I mean, if I look at my sheet, he's got, they've forgotten him. He's got eight catches in the passing game this year.
I don't know this for sure, but it feels like three of those were in one game. Like, it feels like three of those came in one game this year. I don't know which one would have been. Maybe the Buccaneers early in the year, but I agree with you to an extent, but I also see it where Zach Robinson's probably looking at it, and you're in third and eight plus probably a lot of the times where Bijan is catching the ball, or maybe not, but I would rather Bijan catch the ball, I guess, to my point. And so if you're going to have that situation where Algier might get it, it's like, I'd probably rather Bijan have it anyways.
Well, would you like to see him have it in the red zone, or as you guys kept calling it, the red area, which really got under my skin? I don't like that term.
You don't like red area?
Just call it the red zone. Call it the red zone.
Well, it's the Mercedes-Benz drive zone, according to Bo.
But what you were saying earlier was about how when the red zone issues, defenses are trying to force them to go out wide, use the sideline as, you know, that 12th man. Now you have a back that maybe could be your guy to take it up the middle? Or is that what you're wanting to see more of?
I am. I think if you're – red zones is an interesting word there, because I think if you're between the 10 and the 20,
okay,
I like
you want to broaden it.
Well,
to
and here's the problem, Tiff, and it's like we just talked about a minute ago. The tight situations where you get inside the five, I don't think that's – and I think that logic tells you that's Tyler Algier time, because he's a tough runner and can run people over. But our offensive line doesn't block very well inside the five. So I would rather have Bijan inside the five, because then what can you see Bijan doing? He can accelerate towards the pylon. Right, and if everybody gets kind of locked in on the A and B gap, now all of a sudden Bijan can cut outside and have the vision to actually make it towards the pylon and outrun somebody, where I don't think that's Algier's game. He's going to tuck in. He's going to put his face mask in Chris Lindstrom's lower back, and he's going to try to make it into a run.
Yeah, but isn't that what you guys didn't want, though? Because defenses, and I know Bijan has a skill set to get past the defender with his quickness, but isn't that what you don't want in those situations?
I don't want Tyler Algier to bury his face, no.
Well, okay. I've seen Tyler Algier get the ball in space and make people well, miss, but also just run them over and keep
going.
Trying
to tackle.
Yeah, and so I think that Algier can't have a game where he has zero touches.
No.
But I also think that they've done a good job of mixing him in at times, and when he has been hot, they have kept feeding him. Yeah. And that is all that I ask for. I just need, for me, to go back to it, I think you said it best, utilize the middle of the field more. We've started to forget about it, and Kirk Cousins is a guy that he's going to be able to notice things, and as long as, and I think he's on the same page with Drake. I think he's on the same page with Darnell. I don't know about Kyle Pitts. That's a mystery to me because he has a stretch where he plays phenomenal. Just don't come to me and say, well, they need to do more. They need to do more for Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts has got to win. And in fact, the last two weeks, our receivers aren't winning. They're not creating separation, and that hurts too. But if we can help him at all, I'd like to utilize the middle of the field.
Sure.
Stay with us here in the morning shift. Later on in the show, we are giving away two tickets to the Post Malone, I can say this on air, Big Ass Stadium Tour with Jelly Roll and Sierra Ferrell on Sunday, May 11th, 2025 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets go on sale November 26th, 2024 at 12 p.m. at LiveNation.com. So you can see the Post Malone Big Ass Stadium Tour.
Is he playing country or rap or both?
Maybe it's both. Who knows? But hey, coming back, we're going in the huddle. We talked power rankings when it came to QBs in the college ranks. Let's do it in the NFL. We'll tell you where Kirk Cousins falls on the other side on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, this hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart, Lasting Clean, and we are going in the huddle to look at some power rankings as we go into NFL Week 12 of the season. And this is from Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports. On his list, Lamar Jackson is your number one QB. Joe Burrow, the Bengals. Josh Allen, the Bills. Jared Goff, Detroit Lions. Five is Justin Herbert, the Chargers. Six, Jalen Hurts. Seven, Jaden Daniels, the Commanders. Eight, Brock Purdy, 49ers. Nine, Kyler Murray, the Cardinals. 10, Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs. If I scroll down a little further, 18. That is where Kirk Cousins sits on this list, and he has the only reason his Falcons might be safe atop the NFC is because of him. They are giving him credit for that because they do find themselves in a hole right now. But again, Cousins 18th.
Yeah, and who would have thought? Who would have thought that anyone would have C.J. Stroud outside their top 10 going into the season, because he's right above Kirk at 17.
But they also mentioned Kirk is third with turnovers, so he has 11.
Yeah,
season.
There's no doubt he's forced the ball, Tiff. There's no doubt he's had moments where he is. And that's kind of what Kirk is, though, right? I mean, you know when you have him that he's going to make some big plays. He's going to thread the needle in some tight windows.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a ton of yards and touchdown passes, and he's going to give you a chance to win every week. But he's also going to make some tight throws that go against you sometimes.
My question to you guys looking at this list is, given what we know about Kirk Cousins' skill set, is you know, his ability to read defenses, but also lack of mobility, what other quarterback do you think is even comparable to what you'd love to see from Kirk Cousins? Like, if you could design it. Because I'm going down this list, he's not going to do what Lamar does. Joe Burrow, he's elusive, but yeah, I would put them closer to one another. He's not Josh Allen.
No.
Jared Goff would probably be what I would design it as, because you run first, you have electric running game, you can get north and south, you have a good offensive line, and he's going to, you know, do what he does. But he's not Justin Herbert, it's not Jalen Hurts, not Jaden Daniels, not Brock Purdy, not Kyler Murray, not Patrick Mahomes.
Most of these guys have something in common.
Right. Well, my thing is that there is mobility for a lot of these guys in the top 10, and you know, you'd love to see Kirk have an uptick in that, or at least what they ask of him. So I'm just thinking, like, if you got the best version of Kirk Cousins, which other quarterback in the league would he look like? Which one would you love to see him look like, knowing what his limitations are?
That's a tough question, because there, you know, I'm going through, and everybody that I look at can move a little bit. I mean, I think Kirk is better than Sam Darnold. And he hasn't had a game to me as bad as a game that's like Sam Darnold's had. Jared Goff's a good comp.
It's funny because I keep going back to, like, obviously C.J. Stroud doesn't move much. He can if he has to, but he doesn't. Same thing with Jordan Love. And you know, on down to 19, Tua, which is right behind Kirk. Tua gets the ball out so fast, it's like he's turning a double play every time.
Yep, that's the main thing we talked about in our, in our game this weekend. But again, he extended a couple of their drives with his legs.
Yeah.
So he's got that ability.
Well, we've seen Kirk do it, too. I mean, we saw Kirk make a run once. he even juked a guy out.
The double dunk.
And I think he's head and shoulders above Derek Carr. But Derek Carr, as far as the mobility and stuff, I don't think I've ever heard people say that Kirk throws hospital
nobody's
balls.
Nobody's going to mistake him for Josh Allen, old Derek Carr. I wonder, I guess my question really comes down to, what is the ceiling for a quarterback that plays with the style of Kirk Cousins?
Well, look, I think Jared Goff's season that he's having, and you look at numbers, they're not very far. Honestly, Kirk's got more passing yards, he's got less touchdowns, and the same amount of interceptions.
Yeah, and you almost feel like that a lot of Jared Goff, because of the success of the team and because of how good their defense is.
Well, that's it. But they also can put up points, too. Jared Goff's year is reminding me a lot of Matt Ryan's MVP year. There are differences because it's hard to tell, but with six games left, Matt was probably going to end up with more touchdowns that year, and Jared Goff's already got more interceptions than Matt threw that year. But the reality is that I think that's the kind of year he's had, but he just has the defense is so good for that team that I think the offense doesn't feel the pressure. The problem for me right now with our team is our offense, you know, people talk about urgency. Maybe they're pressing too much, or maybe the quarterback is pressing too much at times. And you saw it late in that game in Denver when they're down by a few scores and he's going to, you know, make a throw that he really doesn't need to make. And it turns it over. So
I didn't feel like they were pressing against Denver. I'm with you, though. But I don't blame them for feeling that way, because it feels like if you don't score a bunch of points right now, especially with all the injuries last week, you ain't going to win.
Oh, I'm not saying I blame them. I'm just saying I think that's that might be the case.
Right.
The Buccaneers could be getting their superstar receiver back ahead of their matchup against the Giants. They sit at 4-6 on the season, and they may have some help now with Mike Evans. It looks like he's trending towards returning for that matchup. This is what Coach Todd Bowles told reporters on Wednesday. Evans, of course, dealing with that hamstring injury.
Yeah, they're still in it. They're not out. The Falcons have allowed them to not do anything and stay in it.
Right.
And so
unfortunately,
I think if with their schedule going down, I would take it slow with Mike Evans. I would make sure he's 100% because because when he's out there, I don't want to say you're completely different, because their offense is still played well.
Yeah.
But he is a difference maker. I mean,
changes a lot of things.
With players like that, you think about, you know, what we had in Julio here, and the one thing that Mike Evans just feels like Mike Evans goes every year, 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. This is like every single.
He had 10 straight seasons.
I think he has a chance to still have another one.
Yeah.
Makes me sick.
But the touchdowns are there too for Mike.
Yeah. I'm just glad that.
And it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
I think Abe did a nice job yesterday on the social. I was looking at Abe Gordon's social, and he was talking about as you look at it right now, if the favorites were to hold, that Tampa might be favored in six games. And Mike Evans being a part of that, I think, is probably a big reason why that holds. And look, he's just a difference maker, man. There's no doubt about it. And I'm with you. As a Falcons fan, I'd co-sign on that. Hey, take it slow, Mike Evans. Don't worry about it, man.
And you look at the rest of their schedules. They've already had both of their matchups against the Falcons, but they get the Giants, of course. And again, I'm not marking anything as automatic wins, but if you're getting Mike Evans back, you have the Giants, Panthers next, Vegas next. Like, the only team out of the ones that I just listed that's coming up would be the Chargers, that a team that's not in kind of the state that the other three teams are in. So it
sounds like our next four games or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, so we play common opponents.
Play all those guys. It'd be interesting. It's just gonna be the Falcons have to go out there and dig. This is not a spot that you can even think about coasting. Even if you go 3-3, like we talked about yesterday, you're not safe. And so Tampa, this is not Tampa last year either, when they struggled so much in the run game and they relied so much on Baker. They can run the ball this year with Bucky Irving.
Yeah, I just don't think they're as good defensively as they've been in the past.
That's probably fair.
And I think that's probably the big difference to me. But look, they can lose. This ain't the same. I mean, Carolina can, you know, they can, no, nothing.
Well, you Again, we play. You know, they play Tampa and they play Atlanta.
Yeah, but we'll play them last game of the year. So okay.
You think they've already hung it up?
Yeah, they'll hung it up.
Yeah, how'd that work out for us last year in December?
Well, as it turns out, we'd already hung it up as well.
Yeah, in hindsight, yes. Even though we were dead in the middle of division hunt.
Well,
at that point.
Let me tell you something. As long as we're not playing the game in the rain in Charlotte, we're not going to be, because it'll be here. And Kirk Cousins doesn't decide to roll out and throw it into about an array of one receiver and six guys.
Still can't believe that happened last year.
Well, Atlanta is home to the latest NL Cy Young Award winner in Chris Sale for the Braves. Bo's very excited about this one. So is Mike. We'll get back to it next, and we also have a mic'd up.
Yeah, craziness continues at the household. There's a decision being made that I'm not sure I can sign off on yet. It's a little bit too early. It's coming up next. So mic'd up on Sports Radio 910 The Game.
We are back here on the morning shift this hour, brought to you by Zero Res Smart. Lasting.
What is this bumper music? What are we playing here? I mean, I'm liking where he's going today, but it just,
you don't know that.
I need more.
Feels like a TLC song or something.
You really don't know this song, Mike?
Nah. I don't know it.
This is Suit and Tie by Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
As long as I have there my suit and tie.
I can tell that Tiff knew it. She is like on the tip of your tongue going, what is it?
Well, I was gonna say Justin Timberlake, but I was like, wait, maybe he sampled it from someone else and I didn't want to get blasted on, you know.
You were right, Tiff.
So that's one to me.
Tiffany, don't live in fear of those people.
Well,
blast
I don't really
you?
Look at the just Twitters anyway.
There you go. Don't live in fear.
Just put it away.
Yeah, don't live in
put
no
it
fear.
Away.
I'm
I did
make
see
an
that.
Exit from that app soon.
I don't know where the interview was. I think it was Pharrell that was saying that, or who was it that was saying that he wrote a number of Justin Timberlake songs, and I didn't know that. They were doing the interview, and I was like, that's really cool.
Pharrell is talented, man.
Dude,
him and his hat.
He doesn't age either.
So. Timberlake was in town last week, speaking of which.
How old is Pharrell? I bet
50s.
He's like 45.
No. I think he's in his 50s.
No, I'm pretty. No, I think like not
is
like
he?
Upper 50s.
Double check, but he's got to be like late 40s because I think I'm older than him.
I think he's 50. Go ahead.
Pharrell is 51.
Told y'all.
51. It doesn't look a day past 26.
I don't know if his skincare line is still going, but he came out with a skincare line not that long ago.
It's really kind of a sobering thing when we start talking about the musical artists you listened to growing up. And like in your younger years, and then you realize like, you know, Eminem's in his 50s, and like this guy's in his 70s, and you're like,
Eminem's
I'm sorry,
daughter but got married, I having a baby.
I didn't listen to Pharrell growing up. Like I feel like Pharrell didn't get famous until I was already like out of college. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean
maybe,
that's what I'm talking about. In your 20s when you listen,
I think
to
that's it. True. I think it's because back then maybe he was more behind the scenes than he is now. He's more in the forefront now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you guys subscribe to the thought that you have a limit on how much music you can listen to in your life?
What do you mean?
Like I've talked to, I think my dad was saying this, and he was being co-signed by somebody else that was around us. It's like you just get to a certain age and you stop listening to new music.
Oh, I've kind of.
I was there
for about a maybe a 5 to 7 year window.
Yeah.
And now I've started. You know who got me out of it was Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
I started listening to them, and I was like, oh, okay, well I can get down with this, and then. I started listening to
Whiskey Myers. Yeah.
And they've expanded now, and Amy got me to Zach Bryan. So I've started expanding out again.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, that's a real thing.
Do you think that's a real thing, Day-Day, where you just
– For me, no. I think it is a real thing for people, though, right. Like especially generations before us. They definitely did that. But for me personally, no. Like, am I picky about some of this new stuff? Yes, but I do hear new stuff that I like.
Interesting.
Same. Yeah, interesting. I listen to anything still, and sometimes I'll still even go on a search for somebody new. If I feel like you may, I don't know, randomly get a song on your
for sure.
Well, we
went to Whiskey Myers like 3 weeks ago, and I heard them first on Yellowstone.
Yeah,
I was like, man, this band's great. And
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, they're just a Southern rock kind of band, and I just heard them on Yellowstone, and then I saw that a couple of NASCAR drivers like them, and we went to the show like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was like, man, I love this group. But I don't know that I still listen to new music, but I can feel myself edging that way where I'm like, some of it I'm just like, I can't get on board with this.
I try to, because, you know, you get to go to different stadiums, and Tiff, you know this very well, that there's different places play different stuff.
Sure.
And for warm ups and stuff, and we were in Denver, and I was trying to listen, and they were playing a couple. I don't even know if you still call it. Does rap still rap, or is it hip? What do you call it now? I don't know.
Yeah,
and it's just like it's one word, and it just they just keep. It's just like whoever the artist was just like literally using one word, and the same beat, and it was like that for me for 3 minutes, and I just thought,
I feel like I know what song you're talking about.
I don't know if I could listen to this more than once a month. Like this is just so repetitive.
I think it's more important, I guess, for me to keep a wide vast of music. So, like, you guys were asking about Glorilla last week. Okay, I go from Glorilla to Noah Kahan to, like, Olivia Dean, someone that's been on the up and up.
Why do you think that's important for you?
I just like to have a vast array of music. My summer of Beyonce and Taylor Swift. Like, I just listen to everything.
Yeah, I would really like to see how you react when you hear Glorilla's song. I really would love to be a fly on the wall.
Wow.
I prefer you just call her out, huh? Do it as I'll listen to her while driving, but then you want to, like, you know, not be as, you know,
really?
In your face. But I love it. I love her when I'm working out.
Okay,
in particular.
Okay. That's what
but
I was going to say.
I saw her at oh my gosh, why did I just forget the One Music Fest? Yeah, you know, I saw her there. But I'm not. I know what you're getting at. Like, I'm not like up and like I like beats, and so I like to feel the music. There we go.
Feel
the music. I'm not up there like dancing and stuff.
Being musically where you can listen to different stuff is that's good. Like I've got my season playlist has, I mean I've got Greta, I've got Waylon Jennings,
you're about to get,
but I've also got Nelly, the Air Force Ones. But it's all old stuff though. Like I can't. There's not a lot of new hip hop that I can listen to. Like I love it when everything, you know, was every fourth line rhymed or whatever. Like, I'm sorry.
I need to know what these two are key-keying about, Dylan and Day-Day.
Probably you.
I know they are. So yeah, that's why I sort of
had
to
open
up the floor, you know.
Bring it to the forefront.
Like, put you on my list.
So the TGI Friday song. So, Mike, Bo, you guys probably don't know. Glorilla has a song, TGI Friday. And women, for whatever reason, whether they're married, single, whatever the case is, they love this record because her opening lyric is like, you know, it's Friday something. I'm going out in these streets. Ain't no dude got me under control, basically. Or I ain't got no dude. I'm just going to do me. And I'm just trying to imagine Tiffany. Yeah, pretty much. I'm just trying to imagine Tiffany, like, kind of, you know.
Yeah, you're really digging into that lyric.
I mean, I know I don't, like, go out, but I think that lyric is, regardless if you have somebody or not, that lyric still, you know. It's pretty hard.
No, I think that's what. No, I don't think they're laughing at you. I think they're laughing with you, right?
I mean, it's just like when I still listen. Yeah. I still listen to 3-6 Mafia. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I make myself feel old, but that's kind of what she reminds. Right. You know, it's like she has more of that. That's why I like her and Meg, as opposed to some of the
Mafia.
Other new stuff that's out.
Let me ask you a question: when you're in the gym and you're not with your trainer. You the person that's like got the big headphones and you're like just rapping to yourself, singing along with the lyrics, like a little 3-6 Mafia as you lift.
I will.
Yeah. I definitely do.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. By the way,
I try to like keep it like.
I listen to old school rap when myself. Anyways, all right, let's hit a mic though. Speaking of music, you guys like Christmas music? Are you kind of the kind of people that will put on Christmas music?
Everything feels so sad. Like, it's sappy. That's kind of what I mean.
You know, I don't
it's
think like sad when I hear year. Christmas music.
It's cheery, but it's a tinge of, like, the season's ending, the year's over, we're all getting older, we're all going to die. I don't know. So I tend to like,
no. I don't think
that's
anybody
what you hear
gets
when you hear Christmas.
I think that just might be
the only person I've ever heard say Christmas music reminds them of those things.
It kind of just makes you sad in your feels.
Wow.
And like you're like another year's gone.
Honestly, I've never thought of it that way, man.
Unpopular
opinion. Look at
it
differently this year and cherish your loved ones because we're all inching towards
Sheesh.
I'm not a big
inching towards the light.
I'm not a big Christmas music guy. It has nothing to do with what she's saying. I want to distance myself from those comments. What I would tell you is it just makes it. I got burnt out on Christmas music a while
back. I
think
it's easy to, man.
And I have never been able to come back. And it really drives me nuts when people start it in like October.
I'm glad you said you got burnt out because I think if you listen to Christmas music for, I don't know, more than 6 weeks, it's easy to get burnt out on it, which brings you up to my point. I was instructed today to go get the Christmas tree out to be ready to put up.
Mine's
I'm sorry,
up, dude.
Dude, I know, and you brought that up, and I judged you, and I was like, don't do it. And yet, here I am. I was instructed.
Ah, humbug.
I was instructed. I love Christmas. Not until December. I got to get through Thanksgiving, man. I don't want the Christmas stuff out yet. I'm the kind of guy that puts all the inflatables out in the front yard and, you know, all the other stuff going up, the big blow-up decorations and everything else. But it's too early. Put my foot down. No. Not
before Thanksgiving might be a violation. Usually, I think at our house tonight, I need to see what Jackie's cooking up at my parents' house. But usually the Christmas tree is up after Thanksgiving. Yeah. That's usually the fair move.
Yeah, that's the way I side. But here we are a week and a half before that threshold, which I would have usually leaned on.
Dude, mine's been up for 2 weeks.
Y'all are crazy.
I'm glad, though. Hey, I'm glad it helped me find those squirrels.
Y'all are crazy in that house. You got real or fake one?
Oh, it's fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ain't doing that. That's why. You think I had a real Christmas tree in my attic?
We did it real all the way until last year. All the way until last year.
It's just too much trouble.
It's a lot.
It smells good, though.
Well, hell, put a candle in there and burn it if you want to smell good.
That's what we're doing now.
Hey, stay with us here. Later on in the show, we are giving away 2 tickets to the Post Malone Big Ass Stadium Tour with Jelly Roll and Ciara Ferrell on Sunday, May 11th at 2020, in this year, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets go on sale Tuesday, November 26th at noon.
What's the name of the tour?
LiveNation.com.
What's the name of the tour?
Post Malone Big Ass Stadium.
Well, put some bass in it.
Let's go!
Jelly Roll.
It's a big ass stadium.
All right. We'll be right back here on the morning shift. We got Rusty Menzel joining us. We'll get you the latest of college football front on the way on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.